This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're locked and loaded on a Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Jam-packed 2 hours ahead. Preseason week 2 kicks off tonight in the NFL. Lots of injury and contract news. It's also a no way, no doubt day. We've got storm warning. The final half hour of the program, one and only Mike Palm from right here at Circa Resort and Casino. He's going to join us on set for the final half hour. Get Palm's pressing three. Mike Somich as well on the docket. VSiN host of The Handle. He's coming up later on this hour. Get some of his best plays for the day and the weekend, some NFL futures he has interest in. It's a great day to have a great day. Michael, how are you today?
I am great, and it is a great day. We have NFL preseason weekend, probably the biggest preseason weekend. We know next weekend there'll be very limited veterans playing. It'll be more of the younger guys, so hopefully we'll get to see some young players and the veterans play this weekend. So, you know, it's also a great time to keep track of these injuries that have accumulated over the last couple of days, which have affected some teams significantly.
No question about it. We'll get into a lot of those injuries. The big news, though, I want to start off with today has to do with a contract situation. Patriots have traded Pro Bowl pass rusher Matthew Judon to the Falcons for a 2025 third round pick. We talked yesterday late in the show about some trade interest potentially around Matthew Judon, but he ultimately finds a landing spot in a place in Atlanta that we talked a lot, especially around the draft when Atlanta decided to draft Michael Penix Jr. with that number 8 overall pick instead of taking one of those highly touted pass rushers. This is a desperate need in Atlanta. So what do you think about the fit Matthew Judon leaving to go to Atlanta?
Well, they say they're not going to retouch the contract, okay, which I don't understand because Judon wanted a new deal. But I think New England has come to realize after 2 weeks of training camp that this isn't going to be a very good year. It could go from bad to worse quickly. And Judon, you know, to get rid of him to pick up a third round pick. Now, here's the question. If you're like me and think Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot is going to have a mediocre season, then that pick could be in the 70s. But if you are optimistic and think it could be a high pick, then that pick could be, you know, in the late third round, which is not really a valuable thing. They didn't redo the contract. So for Atlanta, they don't extend them. They're just doing it for 1 year. To me, it seems a little bit like they were able to get a need, but I think they need more than just him. Calais Campbell's a good player. They just let him walk out the door. And that to me was really, I think if they had Campbell and Judon, it would be a lot better look.
Well, I was joking with producer Elliot Bowman before the show. I was like, can you name another Falcons pass rusher? And he was like, oh, yeah, Calais Campbell's gone. No one can. So now it's Matthew Judon. That's the guy. This is a team that ranked 32nd of 32 in pass rush win rate last year over the course of the last 3 years. They have fewer sacks than anybody else. So he'll certainly be important, but they don't have anybody else to free him up either. The money part is really interesting, though, to me, Michael, as you referenced. If they're not, like, do you think they're not going to touch this at all? Because you said it, like, that was a big sticking point with the Patriots. He's playing on a $6.5 million deal this year, and he didn't want that.
No, they claim they're not touching it. I think they have to touch it, you know, but he's reported. Now, one thing about Judon, he's a good player. He loves football. He plays hard, but don't lie to him. Don't tell him you're going to do something and don't do it. This is a team for as much success as Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot's had over his career. This is a team that has a high cap rate without a lot of wins, 21 wins over the last 3 seasons, which is all Arthur Smith's fault. That's why they blame him for that. So it'll be fascinating. Look, Atlanta, here's what we know about Atlanta. They're not an explosive offense. Kyle Pitts has got a knee injury. Drake London's a possession receiver. Bijan's really good. Kirk Cousins will help. But will they be able to play for – they're not – their two biggest plays last year were screen passes. Jonnu Smith, who's no longer with the team, and Bijan Robinson on a wheel route. So this is not an explosive offense. Can they play from in front, and can they win these close games? Are they going to be tough enough? But Judon's going to go down there, and it's not going to be nothing like his experience in New England when Coach Belichick was there.
Falcons, high expectations for them nonetheless, minus 130 favorites in the NFC South, despite not having been to the playoffs in the last 7 years and a 7-win season a year ago. So trying to make positive change in that end. But I want to talk about the Patriots side of this as well, because is this a team now that making a move like this feels like, okay, we're just accepting our fate. We're hanging it up. We know we're going to be terrible. Rebuild, retool, yeah. Get the 32-year-old. I think today might be his 32nd birthday, but get the 32-year-old older veteran who's coming off of an injury out of here and just accept our fate.
Yeah, I think the cold water that has gotten thrown on the New England Patriots' face happened in Philadelphia when they saw how far away they were from being a good team. I mean, 3 years ago, Mac Jones's rookie year, I watched practice against the Eagles and the Patriots. That was the year the Patriots went to the playoffs, and they were the better team in those practices. That's not the case. 3 years has taken a huge toll on this New England team, and I think they have come to realize that, A, you know, they don't have Mac Jones anymore. Drake May's not ready. We'll see if he plays. Femi thinks he's going to play three series tonight. I'm saying, why doesn't he play three quarters? But we'll see. Quarterbacking, offensive line's a mess, right? And now their two best defensive players, Barmore and Judon, will not be in the front seven. That weakens them. And then you take away the head coach who was a defensive specialist in Bill Belichick. How good are they going to be? I think they are going to be the survivor pick of a lot of weeks. Yeah.
I agree. And I think that's a good point that last year the defense was kind of the shining light of what was an otherwise really, really brutal, hard to watch season. This year, season win total set at 4.5. The game tonight against the Eagles, preseason week 2 kicking off in Foxborough, Patriots laying 3. Initially, they were a 2.5-point dog, but we've seen a huge flip that way, -115 to the 3 as well. So that ticking closer to the 3.5, total 35. We'll discuss this game as well as all of the lineup in week 2 of the preseason coming up in the next segment. But for now, let's keep it in the division because you also mentioned off the top, we got some injuries to keep track of. Right before we came on air, we found out that Bills linebacker Matt Milano suffered a torn bicep, is going to be out indefinitely. He was such a loss when he went down last year for the Buffalo Bills defense. A big reason why people have optimism at all about Buffalo's defense this year was that he was coming back healthy. How significant is this for the Bills?
Well, this is huge for the Bills. I mean, let's be clear. I mean, Milano sets the defense, but what makes this harder for the Bills is communication. Okay. Sean McDermott's defense has to communicate. He needs a middle linebacker who talks. Okay. He needs a middle linebacker who can get everybody lined up. But when he does it, and he also needs two young safeties that can get it done too. So now we've lost High, we've lost Poyer, and we've lost Milano in this defense. The middle of the defense is going to be really challenged. This is a tough injury, but look, this is what Buffalo wants. They like small players. They want to play a nickel defense. They want to play fast. Great. It's wonderful in theory, Stormy. The problem is football's a big game, and there's a place for the little man in football. It's just not in front of the big man, and Milano has been hurt, and when they don't have Milano, they're not the same team.
Yeah, nobody thinks Von Miller's about to step up in his absence and really take over now, are they?
Von Miller didn't even make a tackle last year. Stormy, Von Miller didn't even make a tackle last year. So they got to count on Bernard to be the guy. And who else is going to be behind him? You know, last year they brought A.J. Klein back. Watch the Kansas City game. Kansas City went right after A.J. Klein. It just didn't work. I mean, this is a defense that needs to play from in front, that needs to rush the passer, even though they don't have great rushers. Rosario, they re-signed. Espinosa is one of their better rushers. Von Miller was non-existent.
Season win total for the Buffalo Bills, 9.5, +140 to miss the playoffs, -175 to make, and +180 favorites there in the division. The Cowboys, Michael, got a deal done Wednesday. Nope, not CeeDee Lamb, not Micah Parsons, not Dak Prescott. We'll still wait. But they did sign free agent former Jets defensive end Carl Lawson, also made a rare interdivision trade with the Giants for reserve defensive tackle Jordan Phillips in exchange for a late round pick in 2026. What do those moves tell you about Dallas right now?
Well, forget the players. What it tells you is Dallas is not happy with their defensive front, and they shouldn't be. I mean, Mazi Smith was bad last year, right? He was not very good. They've lost Hankins. You know, they lost Galmore. They lost the kid who went to the Washington Commanders team. You know, so they've lost three of their depth players. They couldn't play the run last year. So they're trying to get Phillips, who, according to our friend Pat Leonard, wasn't even going to make the Giants team, which you've got to worry a little bit there. They need him to come in there and give them some size and some substance. I'm sure Mike Zimmer's not happy at all with Mazi Smith. I've watched him play last year. That wasn't good enough, right? They're too much on the edge. Mike wants physical guys to take guys down the middle and see if he can handle it. This run defense, if they don't play in front, people are going to run the football on him effectively.
This Lawson, by the way, 29 years old, he had a pretty good season 2 years ago. 7 sacks, 33 tackles.
Then he gets hurt.
But he gets hurt. He gets hurt. And last year, he was even a healthy scratch in more than a handful of games, too.
Never came back. Right. Exactly, Stormy. So what happens to him is he has good year, then he gets hurt. Good year gets hurt. You know, this has been going on for him since Auburn. That's why he was a third round pick. As a freshman at Auburn, he was sensational, got hurt. Then he kind of lost his way a little bit. That's why he was a third round pick.
Also, Jerry Jones speaking out again on the Dallas Cowboys contract situations. When asked about CeeDee Lamb via ESPN yesterday, he said that they are conscientiously working toward a deal for CeeDee. So we just continue to get these, as I said about the Brandon Ayuk situation, these non-update updates on these contracts, Michael.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just tell us when it's done. You know, I mean, you know, just tell us when it's going to be over with. I think, look, I have no doubt, and I wrote about this for a column, I have no doubt that CeeDee Lamb will be a Cowboy on opening day when they go to Cleveland. I don't doubt that at all. I do not believe Prescott will get done. I don't believe Parsons will get done. I know Parsons is playing because he knows he will get done. Mm-hmm. But the reality here is Jerry doesn't want to hand out cash for that bad game against Green Bay.
Yeah, and that's a great reminder as well. Michael has a full breakdown of this situation up live on vsin.com right now, talking all things Cowboys and the concept of when around Jerry Jones and this Dallas team. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, talking all things preseason week 2, we'll preview the game tonight and the betting angles, as well as all of the lineup updates you need this weekend.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, Stormy, this is my favorite segment of the week, the Storm Warnings. And last week we started off by saying, you know, everybody calm down. Don't overreact to what we saw at the quarterback play. But you have done an extensive job of studying these quarterbacks. You've seen a lot of college games. Without any overreaction, what is your opinion of these young quarterbacks as you take charge and looking to bet games this season?
Yeah, Michael, I love that segment that they do, that the Follow the Money guys do. I don't want to overreact, but I think this rookie class looks really good at the quarterback position. Yeah. I do feel so much for J.J. McCarthy with his opportunity this year getting cut short with the torn meniscus. But these guys, Michael, and you tell me if you agree, you think about how much went into this year. Like, this was the draft class for quarterbacks that everybody had been waiting for. And yes, I kind of get the vibes that this is going to be similar to the 2020 class, that, hey, you might not be the biggest Tua Tagovailoa fan, but you look at that group of guys when they came out, all of them got second contracts. I think that could be the way of the world for this batch we have here. Caleb Williams looks like we're going to have competent quarterback play for the Chicago Bears in the first time in what feels like forever. The way that Jaden Daniels is going to step in the coaching staff with the Commanders feels like it's something to look forward to. You look at Bo Nix, who we just talked about at length with Mike Somich on the program, and your comments on the relationship with Sean Payton and how badly Sean Payton wants this thing to work. He's going to set this kid up for success. This batch of guys, I think, is one to watch and one we could be excited about.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think you're right. And I think that, you know, the only one there's a little doubt of early on is Drake May. And it's hard to judge after just 3 plays. So I think it's a really promising start. It's funny, Stormy, you know, because when I was at Vegas, when we were doing the draft out there, everybody, oh, there's not going to be 6 quarterbacks. There's no way it's 4. You know, history says it's 4. It's always 4. And look, there might be 6 guys that end up being really good players in the league.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just saying they all ended up in the top 12, let alone just being drafted in the first round. But finish your thought.
And, well, Spencer Rattler's, you know, he's having a great camp. I mean, if Derek Carr stops short, Spencer Rattler's liable to take his job. All right, let's go into college football. I mean, last year we saw the committee select putting Liberty in the Orange Bowl, which we knew was a disaster. The betting market knew it was a disaster. You and I both screamed to the selection committee to put somebody who handicaps games on. Let me ask you this question. You're warning the committee about going down the same road. What are you going to say to them?
Yeah, Michael, I think that you teed that up nicely because yesterday at the end of the show, this is kind of what got the wheels turning for me. We were playing Why Not Wednesday like we always do on a Wednesday. And I said, could you say why not to Liberty making the college football playoff this year? We both were adamant about saying no. And I feel like I need to continue to push this forward and remind the selection committee of what happened last year, specifically with Liberty in the Fiesta Bowl, as you referenced. They lost that game horribly to Oregon, 45-6. And this was a Liberty team that, like they have this year, had the easiest schedule in all of college football. And it's not like they were skating by, right? They were largely dominant in those games. Their average margin of victory was around 20 points per game. Their offense averaged 38.5 points per game last season. But the teams with which they played were all terrible. And the first time they had to play an actual good team in a big game, they got embarrassed. And the selection committee, for me, should, and I believe genuinely will, take strength of schedule into account much more. So if you are looking at these group of five teams to make the college football playoff, don't just automatically look for one that has a cupcake schedule that they can run through. Look at a Boise State who does have some tough opponents on that schedule. Look at a Memphis. Look at a Texas State who we talked about earlier this week. Because even if they do have a loss or so, they win that conference championship, they're going to be given the benefit of the doubt a little bit more. And the dissenters of this thought process with me say, well, the selection committee should actually be learning from Florida State and not allowing an undefeated conference champion to be in the top four. For me, that's apples and oranges, especially considering, Michael, I still firmly believe the committee made the right decision last year not putting Florida State in that game. I think that they're going to learn their lesson from Liberty, that they're going to give that opportunity to a group of five team that is in a more deserving position given the strength of schedule that they played. So Liberty, to me, is a St. Jude's bet. I would not do it. Their strength of schedule is literally 134 of 134.
Yeah, I mean, look, everything about college football is level of comp, whether you're evaluating pro players to come to college or whether you're evaluating teams. I mean, one team might look good, you know, against Indiana, but when they play Ohio State, they don't look as good. So if you don't weigh that into the decision making, and, you know, nobody, we all want to watch the games, really, we do, but we don't want to watch bad games. And so I think you're dead on. I love that. I love this take. I love this storm warning. All right, let's shift to a favorite sub. One of my favorite movies of all time, and it was made well before you were born, is called All the President's Men. It was based on a book about the Nixon administration and Watergate. And in the movie, they always say, well, that's a non-denial denial.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the favorite quotes, another non-denial denial. And so Brandon Ayuk, all we seem to have is a bunch of non-denial denials or non-update updates. Yes. Give us your take on that.
It's driving me nuts. As a 49er fan at this point, I'm like, walk or stay, just get me out of this freaking Twilight Zone, Groundhog Day situation that we're in with these non-update updates. Every day it's something different. And this has been all off-season long. Like, it started days after the Super Bowl with his girlfriend on social media saying that maybe he's not going to be back this year. Of course, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan say the opposite, even at the draft when they draft Ricky Pearsall. Then you got the TikTok with the Jaden Daniels conversation. They don't want me back. John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan say, well, yes, we do. Ayuk then requests a trade, and we have all of these offers out, including from the New England Patriots, who offer this guy $32 million. And he says, no, I don't want that. The Cleveland Browns have an offer on the table. The Steelers have an offer on the table, which now the reports are that the Steelers have a deal in place. All it's going to take is a phone call. But of course, the phone call is not happening because, according to Mike Garafolo, they have one more hurdle the 49ers need to overcome to see if they can land Brandon Ayuk, because clearly Brandon Ayuk wants to be a 49er. I'm just sick of the saga. I'm sick of the back and forth. I'm sick of the talking and the social media this and the social media that and going through other people to disseminate your message as well. Just wake me up when the deal is over. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know who would echo all your comments here? Kyle Shanahan.
I'm sure. He's sick of it too.
He's sick of listening to Trent Williams. He said, you know, Robert Saleh can say it's no big deal, but every day you got to answer to Hassan Riddick. It's a pain in the ass. It really is. And so you just get tired of it. And at some point, when does IU jump into the pool? Either you want to play or you don't want to play. Like, I think to me, after this weekend, he either has to decide what he wants to do, because this can't continue to linger. Same thing with Ja'Marr Chase, who's now not even in the building. So that's got to happen. Trent Williams, That's got all these deals that people, we're getting to the point we're 2 weeks away. Speaking of 2 weeks away.
Real quickly, Michael, before we move on, I just want to follow that up with, and that's a concern for on the field play as well. We've talked about it a lot with these guys who are dealing with contract negotiations. They're not in the shape that they need to be, and they're not as game ready as they should be. That can impact performance. That can impact injuries. Like a lot of those things I'm thinking about, but again, just wake me up for the news.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of 2 weeks away, we're 10 days away from college football week zero. Why we call it week zero, I have no idea. Is there something wrong with week one? Why can't we start with week one? Anyway, that's a whole other subject. But what warning do you have for bettors that plan on wagering next Saturday's slate?
You know, and it's funny you say that, Michael. You know, last week I was in Bristol for our ESPN college football seminar gearing up for the season. And we had a guest, one of which was the NCAA president, kind of talking about the season. And he even said week zero, like, why? Why are we doing this? But neither here nor there, to your point. We are all extremely excited to bet college football, right? Like, to your point, we are days away. Week zero is going to be here before you know it. It's a four-game slate led by Florida State against Georgia Tech. People are already planning their bets out. We've seen money come in from the 13. It's down to 11.5. Ooh, we're all feeling good. Now, listen. I understand we're excited. I understand we want to bet everything that is in front of us because we have meaningful football on our television screens for the first time in what feels like eternity. That's fine. But if that day does not go well for you, let's say your opening bet doesn't work out. You go to Montana State at New Mexico. Things still aren't clicking. SMU in Nevada. Whatever you do, do not chase on the 9 p.m. Pacific time, late night, Delaware State at Hawaii game, okay? I know you want to be profitable after the opening week. We're all excited. We're ready for college football. Don't do it, okay? Manage that bankroll. Have some strength. There's going to be great games coming up in week one. Save what you got. Just go out, cut your losses. Do not chase on Delaware State at Hawaii. I beg you.
Please don't. And don't chase ever. There's always another game coming. You know, you just don't, you know, that they, I think what happens in this betting market is you want to tally your sheet up at the end of the day and have a positive when, to me, trust the process. Tally your sheet up at the end of the year.
Yes, I know you're going to be mad through three games that you're not profitable. Don't just go and try to double down and do what you can on this game. It's not worth it for all that is holy. No. All right, we're going to hit the break. Fun storm warning. Appreciate you, Michael. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Resetting hour two of the Lombardi Line. We got injury updates. We got contract updates. The NFL is here, baby.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
Let's get into it. Yesterday, Michael, you listed your top five coaches with the most pressure to win now. Three of them, coincidentally, are all coaching in the same division. So, no way or no doubt, at least one NFC East head coach will be fired mid-season this year. What do you think?
Mid-season, you know, it's not Jerry. Let's go through it. It's not Jerry Jones's style to go interim. And who would he hire to replace Mike on the staff? Mike Zimmer? No, I don't think so. Mm. Okay. So that's one. All right. Philadelphia, no chance. They're going to be too good to fire. It's going to be based on the ending of the season, not what the middle of the season looks like. It's the only one would be the Giants, and they have an early bye after week six. So they're going to have to make some progress. But again, who would they hire on their staff? You know, I mean, John Maris hired, since Tom Coughlin, he's hired Ben McAdoo, he's hired Pat Shermer, he's hired Joe Judge, and now Brian Daboll. I mean, they're going to need some time to think this over before they make a quick decision.
Well, especially midway through year three, too, you think that you might give them a little bit more of a chance to see what they could do, especially as you're trying to build that roster together. So I'm with you. I think no way, but these are coaches definitely who are looking over their shoulder about whether or not they're going to have a job at season's end. Now, I think Micah Parsons, Michael, might be a fan of the Lombardi Line, because when he was asked about CeeDee Lamb's contract this week, he said, no doubt he will be on the field for the Cowboys week one. No way or no doubt do you agree, Michael, that CeeDee Lamb will play for the Cowboys in the opener?
I agree. He's going to be on the team after week one. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, look, he's not going to miss a game check. He's not going to, you know, this is all just posturing. Jerry says that they're working diligently towards an agreement, and I believe it. So, yeah, I think there's no doubt he'll be there.
I think the word he used at least yesterday was conscientiously. So go Jerry. I'm a big fan. Browns are a 2-point favorite in that season opener against the Cowboys. Total 44. Let's stick with this theme, though. No way or no doubt, the fate of Dak Prescott and Mike McCarthy are tied together after this season.
No, they're not tied together at all. I mean, they're going to be separate entities. Even though Mike has done a tremendous job of coaching Dak and getting him exactly to have the best season that he could ever have, but I don't think they're tied together at all. I think that Jerry will make an independent decision on Mike. I think Jerry's made a decision on Mike. I think this is one of those situations, Stormy, where Jerry's made a decision. Mike's got to prove him out of the decision. That game, people don't realize, I wrote about it. I've talked to a lot of people about this. That game against Green Bay, when you study the tape and you look at it after 7 months and objectively sit there and watch it, you realize how poor of an effort Dallas gave. And Jerry's going to want to see if Mike can work himself out of that. And it looked like, these are not my words or somebody else's, it looked like they were out partying the night before the game. So McCarthy isn't going to, he's fighting to prove he should keep his job. He's not fighting for his job.
Yeah, they look slow, lethargic, didn't know what they were doing. And so I agree on the surface with everything that you said. But I will add, I do think it's entirely possible, Michael, that Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott could both not be with the Dallas Cowboys next year, whether that be Mike McCarthy getting let go and Dak Prescott having the opportunity as a free agent with the things that he has built into his contract and the no franchise tag, that he's going to have the opportunity to have the pick of the litter wherever he wants to go. So very possible.
But Jerry can always, I mean, Jerry can pay what he can pay. Does he want to go be the quarterback of the Saints for the team $90 million over the cap? I don't know. Does he want to come out to Las Vegas and be the quarterback of the Raiders? I don't know. You know, Dallas is a tax-free state. Dallas is America's team still gaining a lot of attention. I just don't see it as a smart play. Now, if Jerry says, I'm not signing you, okay, now you got to go find yourself a deal.
Yeah. Dak's going to get paid no matter what. We know that.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see still where that will be. And if Jerry can keep on pulling at those heartstrings, like, don't you want to have that star on your helmet and get all those other endorsements that you get around here as well? Let's go to San Francisco. No way or no doubt, Michael, if the 49ers do sign Brandon Ayuk to an extension, Deebo Samuel's out next season.
Yeah, I no doubt that he is out. I think, to me, Deebo's $17 million unguaranteed. Now, I don't think they'll just kick him to the curb. I think they'll try to do something reasonable. But is the thought of paying him $25 million, then paying $28 million for Ayuk, if that's what they pay, to go along with paying Christian McCaffrey all the money, I just don't see that. I think he would be the one guy to get squeezed out.
Michael, if we do hear a Brandon Ayuk deal come through with the San Francisco 49ers, do you have a sense of what that number would be?
I think it's going to be right at $28 million. I don't think it gets to 30. I think that's been the stumbling block. He wants to be over 30, and I think it's not going to get there.
Missed opportunity with the Patriots.
It was over 30 at the Patriots, like you said. But 30. He didn't want that deal.
Yeah, and I don't blame him. Like I said, he wants his cake and he wants to eat it too, that he can make as much money as possible and still play on a good team. Well, I'm sorry, Brandon, the 49ers aren't going to offer you $32 million. So let's see if we can work out a deal. But again, I don't even know why I brought this topic up, Michael. We're done. We're not talking about Brandon Ayuk anymore. I know, it's my own fault. I wish we weren't talking about the Jets anymore, but we can't help it because every week there's some new development. This week we learned that Hassan Reddick, who is yet to step on the field for the Jets after being traded for by the Eagles, is now requesting a trade elsewhere because they can't get a contract done, even though the team knew that he wanted a contract regardless. No way or no doubt, Hassan Reddick will play this season with the Jets. Is this going to happen? How's this going to go down?
I think there's no doubt. Nobody's going to trade for the problem. Like, we're acting as if he's some kind of celebrity. Nobody is going to trade for the problem. So for me, I would say, you know, no doubt he'll play for the Jets this year.
And I mean, Joe Douglas said they're not trading him anyways, like he came out and put that statement out immediately after he requested the trade. But I like the way you put it, that he's got a reputation now here a little bit, that who wants to just add that into their own list of issues that they already have with their franchise? Let's go to college football here quickly. No way or no doubt, this year's college football champ, so the national champion, winner of it all, is ranked in the top five of the AP preseason poll. What do you think?
I think there's no doubt they are. I think that's right. I think, you know, Oregon, I think Georgia, I think the quality of the teams in college, you rarely are overlooked. Now, look, we know Washington came out of nowhere, but they had Michael Penix. But I think, to me, there's no doubt that the best players in college, they're ranked already where they need to be. We'll see how it pans out.
Yeah, the AP top 25 for the preseason came out earlier this week. Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Alabama rounds out the top five. The stat that we gave you earlier this week as well from Action Network's Brett McMurphy is that over the last, I want to say it was 21 years, the national champion has come out of the preseason top seven every year, but the two exceptions were Florida State when they had Jameis Winston and Auburn when they had Cam Newton. So it's basically you are a top seven team or you have a Heisman Trophy winner, but this top five certainly does look hard to beat once we get deep in the season. One more here for you, Michael. At least one college football playoff ranked team outside of the top 25 in the AP preseason poll will finish in the top 10. So a team that is not in the poll right now will end up in the top 10.
No doubt. There's always a sleeper team somewhere, just like there's always a team that goes, 91% of a team going from worst to first in the NFL. Yep. That happens every year.
Yep.
But it's the same thing in college football. There's a team out there that's not ranked in the top 25 that's going to have a good players, they're going to have transfers, and they're going to be really good.
It's 28 of the last 30 years that an unranked team in the preseason.
I'll go with those odds.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Last year, it was the Missouri Tigers, by the way, who ended up having an 11-win season, having a great major bowl win as well. You know, producer Elliott's stoked about it. They had a preseason top 25, number 11 ranking, which I thought was saying a lot about the respect for them. And I know yesterday when we had Dave Shumate on the program talking about Missouri's schedule, they could be pretty good this year. I just wonder who that team from the outside looking in could be.
Yeah, that's the one you just don't know. But I mean, it's because we don't get preseason football and we don't know everybody, there could be a team, you know, it's just somebody out there. Is it Indiana who took the best player from the MAC conference at quarterback? Could they take somebody? I'm not saying they will. I haven't studied them. But to me, it's going to be somebody like that. Somebody that hits with the transfer.
You know who I don't think it is? And please, Coach Prime's social media team, don't pull this for a video later on. But
it's definitely
not going to be Colorado.
It ain't Colorado. Colorado's going to be holding on.
Just had to throw that out there. I do hope and pray it could be my San Diego State Aztecs, but that's unrealistic as well. Although I've got excitement for Sean
Lewis. I hope so, too. I love Sean.
Yes.
I love Sean. I hope he does a great job there.
I've got excitement for Sean Lewis. I mean, speaking of the tie to Colorado, there we go. But also the fact that San Diego State, baby, they're going to have an actual quarterback playing quarterback, not a safety. What a time to be alive. All right, we're gonna take a quick time out here. When we come back, Mike Palm is going to join us for the final half hour. We'll talk all things Circus Survivor, NFL preseason, and Palm's Pressing 3.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
My mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, what are the hot button topics today? Let's do this.
Well, there's no hot button topics. They're just good football questions for someone with Michael Lombardi's background. Michael, why do you believe that teams allow players to, quote, sit in while not incurring the daily fines for missing camp, i.e. CD Lamb, Brandon Ayuk, Trent Williams, etc.? I know you have been critical of the Jets as an organization, but don't you feel they are the only team that is actually doing it right by allowing the fines to be charged to Reddick?
Well, they are doing it right. It wasn't what they planned to do. They had no choice but to fine Reddick. He wanted a contract. And I'm sure Woody Johnson said, we're going to fine him. Mike, the NFL's gone soft. I mean, let's put it in. I mean, these owners, 32 of them negotiated a settlement with the players to go over to make sure we didn't have holdouts, that we weren't annoying Stormy and talking about contracts all summer. We were talking about the game. And yet, because of these sit-ins, the agents have manipulated it. Now, a lot of it is combined because of the PR, right? Most general managers are so PR conscious, they don't want to upset the ranks or somebody's mad at them. And the owners are very liberal in their ability. They don't want it to think it's going to disrupt the team. I think it's about strength. I think you have to show strength. The players are trying to demonstrate strength. Look, this is not, we don't want the player. The Ayuk has been wanted by the 49. This is, we can't agree on a contract. This is a business. And the business has rules that were so good for non-holdouts. Look, to me, here's what I would say. If I were running an NFL team, I would say to Matt Judon, I would say to Brandon Ayuk, look, we will negotiate with you to continue to do a deal. You got to practice. You got to prepare for the season. We're not going to sit here and comp you room, food, and beverage and hope you play the slot machine. We're just not going to do that. But we will negotiate with you. We'll give you days off. We'll take care of your body, all those things. But you got to practice. You got to play. You got to do those things. If you want to sit out, then you're going to get fined. You make the choice.
Michael's answer really leads into my second question.
I know, which, as Michael said, and then we'd stop annoying Stormy, we're tripling down on the Brandon Ayuk conversation. Let's hear it.
Speaking of Stormy's hero, Mr. Ayuk, Michael, if he truly wanted to leave San Francisco, wouldn't he have done so already? Three teams wanted him. Two have offered him big bucks, and yet he still hasn't left. Shouldn't the 49ers just call his bluff?
They have already. They've called it. And at some point, you got to say to them, look, either you start practicing Monday before after our preseason Sunday night game against the Saints, or, you know, we're going to trade you. You know, at some point, you just look, all this indecisiveness, it's a little bit like those 10 people that signed up for Survivor. They're never going to win it. They're never going to win. You know, you ask a lot of people, you're going to get a lot of bad answers.
Poor Dennis Ketchum-Strays.
So if you don't put deadlines on it, it's impossible.
I said, poor Dennis Ketchum-Strays, Michael. But yeah, my thing with Ayuk and this whole situation is he has just continued to lose leverage every step of the way, because you're admitting that the money is not, for as important as it is, it's clearly not the most important thing, because you're not accepting money from a team that has offered you more than anyone else would.
I agree. It sets precedent, too. Like, yeah. How do you deal with it? Look, there's some players that can set precedent. They're too good. You want to work around it. But there's some players that, oh, all of a sudden now I got everybody coming in. Look, here's the thing. You need rules. Every team that operates as a team, every family that operates, as if they have rules. Everybody's got to adhere to them. They're for everyone. If you don't want to come here and you don't want to be a part of the team, that's fine. This is what your CBA negotiated. And as a fiduciary duty to the team, I have to enforce these rules. That's my job. Just like it's your job. But if you come here and I let you just have a cocktail, have lunch, have dinner, get you a nice massage, all those things, you know, I'm the one who loses.
All right. Third question is involving J.J. McCarthy, Michael. How much does his season-ending meniscus injury affect the Vikings' future? And I say this because their head coach and their GM, both contracts are done at the end of next year. Should he have had the minor meniscus injury, he could have been back in 6 weeks and could have been part of the day-to-day operations of the team. But because it's the major, he won't be back till minicamp next year, and that stunts a whole year of his development. How big of a blow is this to the future of the whole organization?
Well, let's just put things in perspective. This organization that has their GM and their head coach in the last years of the deal, we're planning on playing Sam Darnold all along. I think this actually helps their team, not hurts their team, because now the no longer people are going to be calling for J.J. McCarthy, and Darnold's going to play tense, and Darnold's going to play scared. now Darnold knows that, you know, Nick Mullins ain't coming to get my job. Nick Mullins ain't their future. I'll play good. I'll do what I have to do. I'm playing for another contract. I think if you're Kevin O'Connell, I think you've put enough good stuff on tape to know that you're going to be a head coach in the NFL and that someone's going to hire you. And just because you don't have a contract done right now, that doesn't mean it's not going to get done. Look, I think the Wolf family in Minnesota is very good. I think they understand things. Look, here's what they did. And so we're clear. They decided, look, we're tired of being in cap hell. We're tired of being under a prisoner to Kirk Cousins. That came from the ownership. That didn't come from Kevin O'Connell. Kevin O'Connell wanted to sign Kirk Cousins. But when ownership says we're tired of this, that gives you stability. You know, here's what happened. Josh McDaniels goes into Las Vegas. The owner wants to get rid of Derek Carr. Derek Carr was on the owner's hit list going back to John Gruden. No coach would get rid of him. McDaniels gets rid of him. The problem is he did what the owner wanted, but he didn't have a backup plan. See, this is what happens. Whereas the Wolf family is fully supportive to getting a quarterback after the Cousins go. And I think that'll pay dividends for Kevin O'Connell and the general manager.
From a survivor perspective, Michael, do you think this rash of injuries with the Vikings this week makes the Giants a sneaky survivor pick in week one?
Here's what I would say to that. If you can do that, you got brass, you know what, because Daniel Jones against pressure is one of the worst quarterbacks in the National Football League. Daniel Jones against zero blitz pressure, speeding him up, not have to sack him, speed him up. Brian Flores leads the league in pressures. The matchup isn't great. Now, understanding that Sam Darnold is going to make mistakes too, and I could easily see the Giants winning this game, but I would have a hard time betting Daniel Jones against pressure. And this offensive line has not improved. If you consider that Jermaine Illuminor and Greg Van Roten, the starting right tackle and right guard for the Raiders, are now starting for the Giants. How do you call that improvement?
Near pick'em game, Giants a home dog of one, sitting here total 41.5 for that game. That would be an interesting pick, though, instead of just going for the big favorites, if you like the idea of just fading where they're at right now and the Daniel Jones will get off to a good start.
I am upset with myself because I let this number get away. But a month ago, the Vikings were 15-1 to be the last team to win a game. You could have bet that and then bet them against the Giants in week one. Because after that, they're going to be a dog in their like next 8 or 9 games till they play Tennessee. And then who knows what that'll be. Michael, I got time for another one. Do you believe Kevin Stefanski has complete autonomy in Cleveland? Because I cannot believe that if he did, that Deshaun Watson would be his starting quarterback.
Of course he doesn't have complete autonomy. I mean, the Haslam family runs the team. They've always run the team. You know, and so, you know, they got Paul D. Podesta in the front office. I mean, this has always been a committee. You know, it's interesting, Mike, that David Tepper and Jimmy Haslam both served as minority owners of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And when they both left those organizations, you know, Haslam to Pittsburgh, Tepper to Carolina, they didn't follow the Pittsburgh model at all. They haven't. No, this is truly, look, the reason they fired the coaches to bring new coaches in is because they're trying to make the quarterback. It's the same reason why the Giants keep firing coach. It's the same reason why Carolina signed all those offensive linemen. They know they need to try to protect their investment.
Michael, Bill Lady likes when I go rapid fire with you. So here's a question you got to answer. I'm running up against the wall, but how much do you glean from Bo Nix's performance in the first preseason game?
I think it just reinforces that Sean Payton's all in. Mm-hmm. He's all in on the kid. And all that performance did was convince other people he's good.
I thought you were going to give more. I thought we were rapid fire.
Well, no, well, I can't believe Michael answered in 7 seconds. So I wasn't ready for the audible there.
Well, as Mike Somich mentioned earlier on the show, Bo Nix currently available as high as 18-1, largely 14-1 out there for Offensive Rookie of the Year, if that is of interest for people.
I want to say this, Michael, for people, and it could be different from different books, but people who bet McCarthy Offensive Rookie of the Year, those bets are gone. Those are action, right. But if you bet over yards, over touchdowns, those are refunds because he's not going to play a snap.
Good reminder there from the book's perspective.
Thank you, Mike.
For Mike Palm, Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. Sharp Money is coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.